Good morning, everybody. My name is Pramod Khargonkar. I'm the Assistant Director for Engineering at National Science Foundation. So first thing I want to do is to bring you greetings from our director, Dr. Franz Cordova. And in fact, her background is very interesting with respect to the meeting that we are having here. She has a BA in English and a PhD in astrophysics. So if she had the time and her schedule was a little freer, she would, I'm sure, would want to be here and participate and contribute to the discussions. Before I make a few comments, I want to recognize a few of my colleagues from National Science Foundation who are very much part of making this workshop happen. John Krupczak. I don't know where John is. John is right there. Donna Riley. And Kishore Mehta. And I don't know if anybody else from NSF came in the evening, in the morning. Tom. And so I know that they are all very, very interested in the discussions that are about to take place. NSF, of course, is very, very interested in education, in engineering education. There are two main parts of NSF where we support these types of things. One is Education and Human Resources Directorate, and John comes from there. And the Engineering Directorate, our EEC division, Engineering Education and Centers Division, where Donna is from. So these are places, but all our other divisions also have an interest in support education. So I thought what I would do with the rest of my my time is to offer a perspective from where I sit as to how I see this event, how I see the discussion that about to take place could have tremendous impact into the future. So as we look at the world, you know, we are about 7 billion people on this planet by all accounts. We are about to go to 9 billion by 2050. And although varying parts of humanity have varying challenges, but they are all mega challenges. So if you think about energy, water, food, health, security, and I can go on, sustainability, each of these is a grand challenge as to how we will have a sustainable civilization that lives in peace and our children and their children will have wonderful lives, fulfilling, meaningful lives. These are going to require not just technological solutions. So clearly, engineering and technology has a lot to do in terms of how this future is going to unfold. And arguably, technological advances are going to underpin really great solutions to these challenging problems. But these are more than technological problems. They deeply intersect social, behavioral, economic, and human dimensions of who we are as individuals, as members of various kinds of groups, our various identities as you know, family, social circles, organizational affiliations, and then members of various nations and the world at large. And so if you take that perspective and take our history as engineering profession that has just an absolutely admirable record of having advanced human civilization over the last several centuries, last decades, there is a lot to look forward to the future. And this meeting could meaningfully impact what happens in the future. Now, clearly, anything along this line would require bringing talent of people to bear upon these problems. I mean, in fact, I would argue that we really don't know what the solutions will be, because they will be created by generations of engineers and others who will come after us. And it would be really critical. And I think there is tremendous literature now that shows that having diverse groups of people addressing problems lead to much better solutions than sort of homogeneous groups attacking those problems. In that, we have major, major problems in the United States. So, despite the work of my colleagues in engineering all across this nation, we have struggled. So if you look at the data on national level data on women in engineering, Number of BS graduates, women graduates, has hovered around 20% for at least the last 15 years. And arguably, you can discern a slight downward trend, which is quite discouraging considering the amount of effort, and I would say considering the amount of serious, well-meaning effort that the community has put. So I do not fault anybody for not having made the effort. It's just the result is very discouraging. Now, there are budding signs of change. No question that we hear anecdotally and in data rising enrollments in engineering at the freshman level, particularly in mechanical engineering and some other fields. We hear data anecdotally about women interest in engineering is growing. So there is hope for better outcomes in the future, but it certainly remains a challenge considering the fact that women make up more than 50% of all college graduates. Arguably, it's like 50. Last time I looked at this number, like 57% of all college graduates are women. So engineering is doing quite poorly in that regard, especially if you take into consideration the fact that we want diverse groups of people attacking these mega challenges. Our record with underrepresented minorities is just as bad. With African Americans, we hardly have made any progress. I mean, we hover around a very low number. With Hispanics, there is certainly an increase. I mean, you can clearly see a trend where we have gone from about 6% to, I think it's fairly close to 9.5 to 10% now nationally. Yet, if you look at the demographic change that's ahead of us, already 2012 was the first year that number of children born among the number of infants born in 2012, white infants were less than 50%, or just about 50%. Now that number has varied a little, but I think we are clearly see a trend where Hispanics is going to be a largest growing minority. The numbers are projected to be 30-35% by 2030-2035. So if engineering is not able to attract women and underrepresented minorities in reasonable numbers, I think one can argue whether the future of the profession is as bright as we would all like it to be. So with this context of these big problems ahead of us, with these big opportunities ahead of us, and with the challenges that we face as the engineering community, I'm really excited about the discussions that are about to ensue in this meeting here. And why do I say that? Well, first of all, just the collective intelligence, collective experience, collective knowledge that is gathered in this room is amazingly impressive. So I think if we just can bring all that knowledge to bear upon these challenges, I think we will have made a lot of progress. But the idea of liberal arts in engineering, as Larry's paper defines it, or more broadly, liberal studies in engineering, is a really compelling idea. Now, there is a long history behind this, and there are existing programs at certain institutions. So it's not as if this is completely a brand new idea. This has been tried, it's been going on. I was just talking to the dean from Worcester Poly, and you know they have such programs, and there are many other institutions that have similar programs. So But the idea that we could, in principle, graduate and educate engineers who don't see problem solving as the main thing, but even framing the question, framing the problem, which is arguably a much bigger creative act than solving a problem. I imagine that an engineer who gets this sort of a broad liberal studies type of education could do a much better job. Proctor sort of enunciated the arguments from Engineer 2020 report, and you know they are all completely valid. So I'm really excited about the agenda. I think it's too rich. You got too many questions that you're going to try and answer. So I would, to sort of conclude my comments, I would offer a few thoughts from NSF perspective as to what we would look for in terms of recommendations, in terms of ideas that emerge from this meeting. And they fall in three sort of broad categories. One would be a real rigorous, intense examination of learning outcomes. So we certainly want, as you think about these different concepts and so forth, to seriously look at what learning outcomes are we expecting, how would we measure them, how would we know that to me it's a design problem, right? So we are trying to design an education package, and then how would you know that this design achieves certain kind of properties? And so I would argue that this group certainly has the knowledge to do it, but I would say let's be really rigorous and serious and as to the extent one can be quantitative about measuring learning outcomes. We NSF would very much want that to be taken really seriously. Second, I think that's a real big challenge. And that I sort of classify, I use different words, to evoke what I'm about to say. Scaling, transferability, adaptability. So given the fact that such programs already exist, and it is easy to imagine, for me it's easy to imagine that there could be additional programs be created, if we don't, from the very beginning, take into account scalability, adaptability, transferability to have national level impact, I think we will have missed an opportunity. So I wish much success to any institution that is represented here. We would love for everybody here to be successful. But if at the end of the day, we end up with what I might call in a very positive way, boutique programs, I'm afraid that from NSF point of view, it wouldn't be sufficient, because our goal is to make a national level impact. And I would suggest that you take that into account as you think about various designs as to who would be the customers, if you will, of the innovations that would come out of this sort of effort. So NSF is big into innovation. We have this whole program called iCore, which educates faculty and graduate students on how you take an innovation and turn it into a larger scale success. And I would argue that kind of thinking, although not exactly the stereotype, not the canonical iCore, but somehow thinking ahead of time as to these innovations, who would be the users of these innovations? These are, in some sense, it's an educational innovation. Who would be the adopters of these innovations? What do they need in terms of properties of these innovations that becomes meaningful in their context? So sort of thinking from the very beginning about scale, transferability, adaptability, cost. I know we live in this age of information revolution. So perhaps there are cost-effective models that one can think about from the very beginning that would have large-scale, national-level impacts. So that's the second thing I would suggest the group think about. And then the third thing would be to recognize that NSF is a catalyst. So we are very pleased to be here to support this meeting. NSF is very interested in catalyzing new innovations, new ideas. That's our role. That's what we do. But NSF is not a sustainer. So if innovations depend, if sort of the scaling and long-term sustainability of these educational innovations, as exemplified by liberal studies in engineering, which is the topic of the day, if they depend on NSF funding for long-term sustainability, I think it would be a mistake. So we got to think right from the very beginning, what happens when NSF walks away? And we, NSF, would want to know what happens when we walk away. So I would suggest that should be a third dimension. Now, this is not an exhaustive list. I'm sure you all have your own ideas about what you want to talk about and what you want to discuss, but I thought it would be appropriate for me to share these thoughts with you. Like I said, we are very excited about the discussions that are about to ensue. We look forward to the results of these discussions. Unfortunately, my schedule is very tight, so I'm going to stay through some part of the morning, but then I'm going to have to leave. But my colleagues are going to stay here throughout the meeting, and I'm sure I'll hear from them all the great things that came out of this meeting. So I wish you all much success. Thank you very much. Thank you.